Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Is gone. Goodbye. Touchdown, Indy. Woo! IU. America. They got a football team now.
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Are you today? Welcome aboard on this Wednesday. Man. Being a poet and don't know it. Welcome aboard. Glad to have you, Jim Coyle. Another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio coming at you. Happy to be here. A rainy day out there today. It's okay. Not too bad. As long as it doesn't get too cold out there. Man, last night over at Simon Scott's Assembly Hall, one thing it was not was cold, as Lamar Wilkerson just was in fuego. My goodness, he shot the lights out. That was a performance the likes that Simon Scott Assembly Hall has not seen in never. Record-setting night for Lamar Wilkerson, 44 points, which I'll be honest with you, that surprised me. That's the record. That's for that building. But a record 44 points for Lamar Wilkerson. His stats are unbelievable. I think I have them memorized. I don't even have it pulled up. It's a second. But I do know that on three-point shooting, he was 10 of 15 for 66%. I think he shot 70% from the field overall. Just a crazy, crazy, crazy night. From a shooting standpoint, one game after Indiana couldn't hit water from a boat, a John boat. 16 of 22 overall from the field. This is Lamar Wilkerson, by the way. 10 of 15 at the behind the stripe, three-point line, and 2 of 2 at the stripe, free throw line. Added 4 rebounds and 4 assists. In 24 minutes of play, 44 points. I mean, that, wow, massive night. What a shoot. And an Indiana team record, 10 made three-point shots. So, I was just wondering this before the show started. I wonder if that record makes it through the season. And I wonder if it makes it through held by the same person. I can see a little friendly rivalry between Lamar and Tucker DeVries. I can see Tucker DeVries getting that hot, although, buddy, there was no way Lamar was going to slow down pulling the trigger last night, and no reason to. When you're on a heater, and he was on a heater, man, Indiana as a team shot 69% on the night, 42 of 61. They shot 55% from behind the 3-point line as a team. Now, if you take away the 10 three-point shots that Lamar Wilkerson hit, and you take the rest of his team and Penn State, and you combine them, they got him by 2 three-point shots, 12 to 10. Free throw percentage, Indiana back to doing well there. Only got 15 attempts, but they were 12 of 15, 80%. That's what you want to see. 10 turnovers. On a night where they scored 113 points and you only have 10 turnovers, very, very good. Very good. Something else in Indiana, again, they continue to do, man. They turn you over and they make hay off of those turnovers. Points off of turnovers last night for the Hoosiers. 26 off of 14 turnovers. Man, they do as good a job there as anybody. Rebounding. They out-rebounded Penn State. So lots of things are going to come up roses there. Is that something that this team can take to Lexington with them now? If nothing else, I promise you, that opened up Mark Pope's eyes. Like, uh-oh, hey, somebody's going to have to guard this number three character. He can shoot. That, yeah, with all that's going on and that has gone on, we kind of forget. Indiana plays Kentucky this Saturday. I cannot remember ever, and it hasn't happened in over a decade, and it's almost an afterthought, not because it's an afterthought, but because there are so many things going on already. We'll hear from Fernando Heisman-Doza today, as we got an opportunity to speak with him ahead of his trip to New York City. He's full Fernando, and got to talk to him about everything. His preparation, his understanding of the ceremony, his knowledge of the season, just all kinds of things. So we'll look forward to hearing lots of that. We're going to hear from Coach Darren DeVries from last night's win, as well as Labar Wilkerson, Reed Bailey. Plenty to get to. Dylan Sid on the program today, as well as Kyle Nedderip. Zach Browning should stop by and give us an update on Indiana football recruiting, as they're reaping the benefits and rewards of the season they're having. Right over my right shoulder there, for those that are following on YouTube, you can see the Heisman-Doza shirt. Appreciate everybody following us no matter where and how, especially on all of our great radio station affiliates. And to keep up with the Hoosiers, if you're an Indiana fan, and something that is a great Christmas gift, get them a subscription to thehoosier.com with On3. It also comes with a free subscription to The Athletic. And you get entered into the Christmas giveaway package that is, it's worth over $400. It has got some great stuff in it. Adidas Team Issued IU Basketball embroidered heavy winter coat, quarter zip backpack, all kinds of good stuff. And plus, we're always giving stuff away. So go to thehoosier.com and subscribe. Hey, it's how we're able to bring this content to you guys. If it's not free. It's a lot of hard work. It ain't free, babies. So do us a favor. Support the boys. Question on Stephen Daly, injured. Well, there's been no official word, and is he injured? Well, I mean, it's not for me to say. I said what I yesterday. I saw him on crutches and wearing a knee brace after the game. But all we'll have now is speculation, unless someone comes out and says something. He allegedly, apparently, simply hurt himself celebrating with his friends and family after the game the other night. So that's a very unfortunate situation. We'll have to wait and see how it turns out with the time off. Hopefully it's not anything to, but what do you, can't speculate, not and not going to. So what are you going to do? Yeah, go to thehoosier.com, subscribe now. How about Notre Dame's athletic director? I can't wait to talk to Dustin or Dylan about this. He's still whining. The Big 12 commissioner, Brett Yorkman, says, shut it up. Says this behavior is egregious. And it is. What a whiny. Wow, you want some cheese with that wine? Good God. I don't understand. It's not like there's an argument. I don't understand what their argument is. What they think their argument is. Who in the hell did you even beat? The best win that Notre Dame has is over a better than average USC team. They lost to a less than average, in my opinion, Texas A&M team. Or I'll give them average. An average Texas A&M team. I don't know what you want. You lost to Miami. I don't know what you want, Notre Dame. Yes, I do. You think you're the SEC. You have your own TV network. You call your own shots. Well, how's that working out for you this year? How'd that work out for the SEC last year? You just don't get what you want all the time, people. It's crazy. Craziness. We'll take a break. When we come back, Dylan Sin.
Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Wednesday. Glad to have you, Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio, and joined by Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette. How are you, sir? How was the trip back to Fort Wayne from Bloomington, bro? That's a hard run.
Oh yeah, no, I mean it's always a long trip back after one of those 8:30 or 9 o'clock starts. But we did okay, and it was fun to be there last night for the terrific game.
Yeah, it was, and I was sending out a tweet during the game, and I'm like, it was pretty late, and I'm like, Lamar Wilkerson having a night the likes that Simon Scott has not seen since never, because it was never. And I couldn't believe that's the record for Simon Scott Assembly Hall, 44 points.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when Trace had the record a couple of years ago. Like the previous record was Trace scoring 43.
I thought it was 42, but yeah.
Yeah, it was against Marshall in 2021. It was his freshman year, I believe. And I remember that game happening, and that was he went off that day. It was a totally different game, obviously. He didn't hit a single three-pointer in that game, but he dominated in a totally different way. And Lamar comes in and just – I mean, you could tell for Lamar it was going to be a good night when he hit that first three. It was the second offensive possession. They ran a little screen for him, and he kind of did like an L cut and was wide open, and he hit it. You could just kind of tell, okay, it might be his night, because he looked really, really smooth knocking that shot down in a way he hadn't in a couple of games, and it just kind of spiraled from there.
Well, it's just amazing from a percentage. He just – it's one of those nights. But we've heard Darren DeVries, and I wish I had one of the clips pulled up where he said, hey, you know, he's going to have nights where he goes 4 for 17, but we know, I think this was in Puerto Rico, but we know that there's a night where he's going to go 17 for 20. So he goes, it's going to come. Well, that was last night, 10 of 15 behind the 3-point line. That's 66%, people. That's not far off from what Indiana was shooting from the free throw line a couple of years ago. And that's not a joke, but that, and not just that, 16 to 22 overall. What is that, like 70%? I forget. Indiana shoots 69% as a team.
55% from 3-point. It wasn't just Lamar. It was everybody. This is certainly good timing, Dylan, as they head to Lexington this Saturday. Will that carry? And I've got to be honest, I would get a little excited if Indiana beat Kentucky at Rupp Arena. I stay neutral 100% of the time. This is the one time I'm going to open it. And there would just be nothing greater, because I think Rupp Arena might, if Indiana were able to go down there, first game back in this series in over a decade, beat Kentucky, because they're not playing well right now. And fans are not happy right now. Lots of pressure on Mark Pope.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty bad down there right now. If Indiana wins that game, Kentucky would be 5-5. And it's not like their metrics are overwhelming where it's like, oh, they've lost a bunch of games to good teams by a couple points. No, they're not playing well. And yeah, like you said, the knives are out for him already down there. He is getting no grace because he is an alum. They are trying to Billy Gillespie him, run him out of town after 2 years. Like it is one of those things where unless something turns around quickly, they might be looking for another coach. As far as I can tell, no one has ever won a major national coach of the year award in back-to-back seasons. I don't know if it's ever happened. Like I was looking to find any other time that it's happened, but what I think Kirsten is going to win at least one or two major national coaching awards this year. He should.
How does he not win several again? He won six last year, I think. What he eclipsed. He's already eclipsed what he did last year, and it's with a team. It's starting to die down, but it was really aggravating to see people because it shows that they don't know what they're talking about. It's not NIL that Indiana has built this on. If people think that are just not informed. They're not one of the NIL kings of football, people. Go ahead.
This is not Texas Tech, right? Texas Tech very, very simply went out and said, we are going to outbid a bunch of bigger programs for really, really good players, and we're going to do it in basically one offseason, right? They went out and got an entire, one of the best defensive lines in college football, maybe the best.
$29 million payroll, in essence.
Right, and that's which is fine. It's within the rules, right? And they went out
and
there.
And that's on top of their $20.5 million
right.
percentage that they can get. Yeah, I'm not saying it's an issue. I'm just saying Indiana is not one of those teams.
Right,
now, the transfer portal is where they have built their bones, but then again, the transfer portal with players that were zero stars, no stars, one star, two star. Mid-level players, the right players. They were just the right players. And that's all it's been. It has just been a magical formula. For whatever reason, a coach that has somehow flown under the radar for his entire career and now gone to the depths of hell of college football and risen like Lazarus.
Yeah, it is one of those things. Like, you just can't. Even the most optimistic person, when Cignetti took over, could not have imagined anything like this, right? I don't think Kurt Cignetti came in and he said a lot of things. He went out there at the basketball game and said Purdue sucks and Michigan and Ohio State suck too. I don't even think in his mind. Maybe he would tell me I'm wrong. I don't think Kirsten Nettie thought this was possible in 2 years. Maybe he thought he could do it in 5 or 6 or 7, and you could get them a year eventually. I don't think he thought this was possible in 2 years. Maybe he never even considered it, and he was just focused on the process one day at a time. I don't know if he thought this was possible, because it's never happened before. And the transfer portal is what allowed it to happen. Like
Had it never happened before.
Yeah,
it was not even if somebody even thought about it happening, you got slapped,
right,
for even thinking about something so crazy and asinine as that. Because this is how it was. Indiana is just not a good. They're a basketball school. You guys are, yeah, you're a good basketball school. Congratulations. And that's just how it was. And that's how, but that's how it was with Indiana. Indiana accepted itself as a basketball school. That was, and I'll tell you, I've said this before, and we've got to take a break, but Indiana football used to be competitive in the Big Ten. They won two Big Ten championships within 20 years, back, you know, in 45, undefeated. I know it sounds like a decade, forever ago it was, but, and then 67, another one, Rose Bowl. But then there was two things happened. There was a racial issue with the football program, and you combine that with the arrival of one Bob Knight and a basketball program that had been floundering for a little bit, just immediately did something very similar to what we're seeing right now. Bob Knight takes Indiana to the Final Four in his second season at IU back in 73, I think.
72, yep.
Or is it, but it was a 73 year, 72, 73 season, yeah.
That's right, so okay, yeah.
They go to the Final Four, and then they're freaking undefeated and winning national championships. Oh, sounds kind of familiar. So, hey, let's take a break. We'll pick this up on the other side, but we'll also hear from Fernando Mendoza. I want to get him in here. Asked him about his preparation to going into Saturday night because it's a big deal. I wanted to ask about the Heisman House, but I didn't get a chance to ask about everything. And I asked him about the rumor of him changing his name to Heisman Doza. Back with more. Indiana Sports Beat Radio, Dylan Sin with me right now after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio. On this Wednesday, you've made it to the halfway point. It's all downhill from here, baby. Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette with me. We had the opportunity to talk to Fernando Mendoza yesterday about his impending trip to New York for the Heisman Trophy presentation, for being a Heisman finalist. And we got to ask him about the season, the Big Ten championship, all kinds of things. And as always, Fernando was, Fernando, Dylan. And I had the opportunity to ask him, and I'll have to get what your question was afterwards and see if I can find it. But I asked him two things. One, I was a little cheeky, but I said, hey, you know, this is the big deal. What preparation have you done? You know, you're going in there, a lot of, you know, his name could potentially and probably is going to be next to some living legends of the game, you know, and what, you know, if he'd thought about that. And then I'd ask if there was any truth to the rumor that he was changing his name to Heisman Doza, a la Joe Theismann to Joe Theismann back in the day, the former Notre Dame guy. So, but here's what Fernando had to say when we met with him yesterday. Fernando, I know you've been focused on the task at hand along with your teammates up until now, but now you kind of are forced to look into the Heisman Trophy as a required reading as you're heading to New York. Have you looked into the history and looked at some of the names that are there that you could possibly have yours etched next to? And then Joe Theismann was actually changed his name to Theismann to an efforts to win the Heisman. Any truth to the rumor you're actually going to legally change your name to Heisman Doza?
So first of all, to address the rumor, I will not be changing my name. My parents and grandparents would be extremely mad at myself. However, you know, it is, you know, I do understand why someone would go to that lengths to do it. And there's no restrictions. Who knows? I might have changed my name to Heisman Doza. However, my whole thing is to be present in the moment and focus the task at hand. And last week was the Big Ten Championship, although there was a lot of drama saying, hey, this Big Ten Championship game, and a lot of the media was, this Big Ten Championship game could be for the Heisman. And I would be lying to you if I said I didn't think about it. However, at that point, the task at hand was preparing for Ohio State. Now this week, the task at hand is recovery, staying sharp on fundamentals, and the Heisman ceremony, as I'm leaving Friday morning. I'm going to be there on the weekend. It's going to be, I've heard, a fantastic weekend. So I've done my research on the Heisman. I got a pretty bad turf burn from the game. And the other night, I just, you know, had trouble falling asleep. So I watched, like, I would say around probably 10 Heisman speeches. And they're just all so great to hear, you know, whether it's a Q&A or whether it's a speech itself, to get research on it. And everyone's heard about the Heisman Trophy. And I've been a college football fan my whole life. I've known, I'm pretty sure I have a pretty good recall about all the Heisman Trophy winners in my, you know, age. But it's always great to hear about great Heisman Trophy winners from the past, some of their great speeches, and just to really research the topic, because it is a present moment at hand, and I want to make the most of the weekend. I want to make the most of the opportunity, whether it's meeting people there, whether it's, you know, a potential speech, or whether it's just enjoying the opportunity with my friends and family.
We'll go to Daniel in the front, and then Seth.
So on that, have you prepped a speech yet? And if not, what are some of the things that you kind of want to hit?
Yeah, I don't want to get too ahead of myself. I mean, there's fantastic players. Diego, Julian, and Love, I mean, they're all fantastic players. I've actually never met any of them personally, but I really look forward to meeting them this weekend. And I think everybody, when you're a finalist, you got to prepare a speech, because anything could happen. And I think as my duty as a finalist is to prepare a speech. So I've started preparing a speech. It's definitely not a final product yet. However, anything could happen. And I'm sure that if any of those other names get called, whether it's Diego, Love, or Julian, they're all going to be fantastic speeches. So really looking forward to whoever's up there talking.
Fernando, you mentioned before how, you know, the Illinois game was, you know, when you first started getting the text and being like, hey, I'm in the Heisman race. I mean, that's two and a half months ago at this point, where, you know, you've been hearing that noise and you've heard the Heisman does a chance and you've just kind of been in that spotlight. What have been the challenges, I guess, of being able to compartmentalize, you know, I'm in this Heisman race, I'm hearing all the noise, and staying focused on the task at hand? How difficult has that been?
It's been a huge challenge, because with the pressure, it's a huge privilege to be a part of the pressure. However, when you see your name in the Heisman, you can see a lot of people maybe get complacent and go down and up in the rankings, or depending on how they play, or just team scenarios and team around them. And I've been lucky enough to have such a great team perform that I've always been in a good position to win games, and that's what's helped elevate me to this position that I'll be on Saturday night. However, it has been a huge challenge, and I think that I've really relied on, I have a mental performance coach, sports psychologist, and really leaning on him has been a huge part of this process. As now that you're here, stick on what got you here, the process, the never-ending preparation, and all the different aspects of really taking it one play at a time, not focusing on the outside noise, and also the coaches harping on those different aspects. And I think with all that, it's really helped myself get in a good headspace where I'm not focused on whether I'm the front runner, whether I'm second, whether I'm 10th, whether I'm 50th in the race. It's really all about the main goal, which has then elevated me to this opportunity.
Far right to Will, and then last one to Joe.
There's Fernando, Fernando, Fernando. Jim Coyle back here with you at Indiana Sports Beat Radio, joined by Dylan Sin. And getting back to Fernando, he can be playful. He's funny. You know, asking him the question about his changing his name, and he really, boy, he just bit right in there and took and rolled with that, which was cool. And that's the thing. He does that. He will roll with whatever. And every interview I've seen him on, or, you know, whether it's post game on TV or whatever, he is able to acclimate himself to every bit of it. But I've got to be honest with you, at his age, I do not recall ever hearing a more polished speaker than Fernando. And it's not just how he speaks, it's what he says. It's how he is always present in the moment, and present in the fact of the those around him to thank. And he is a pretty amazing dude, but that's also why he's probably going to be a pretty damn good quarterback in the NFL, why he's already a pretty damn good quarterback and could possibly be a really good quarterback in the NFL, because that's what it takes to be a good quarterback in the NFL. You've got to be. NFL quarterback is maybe the epitome of professional athlete.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I've been thinking about it because, like you said, how polished he is in these interviews. Like, he is going to be catnip during the draft process, where, like, we're just going to hear so many stories from these GMs and these scouts that come out of the combine, come out of the interview process, where it's like, where people are just going to be so impressed by what he's able to do. Because, I mean, we've already seen Urban Meyer be really impressed with what he can do on the whiteboard, talking about a play. But then you talk about the professionalism and the polish that he has. That's exactly what people are looking for at the combine and during the draft process. So we'll have to see how that plays out, because I think that people are going to be really, really impressed by him in that setting in a way that you don't normally see. And so I think we'll get some good stories out of that as well, of him wowing GMs and scouts in those interviews that they do.
Yeah, it's been enjoyable to watch, and what this team has done. I don't want to focus on it because we don't have any confirmation, although it's not looking good from Stephen Daly, one of Indiana's probably linchpin linemen, one of the best linemen in the country, leads the nation in tackles for loss. Possibly injured, allegedly injured after the game in the post-game celebration. Don't know the extent. Don't know exactly what it is. I saw him on crutches with a knee brace on, walking around. He didn't look super happy, but he's got a couple weeks to get back, but doesn't have to be back for that game necessarily. But, you know, don't know, again, what that extent is if he is, you know, for sure lost or what the case is. And so there's no reason to speculate on it. But they've got time to heal up in some areas, but they're kind of healthy right now in most ways, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's nice that they have some time off to get Omar Cooper back. Obviously he was dealing with something during that Ohio State game. Getting him back for the Rose Bowl will be huge. Having a full complement of receivers for really the first time, other than the Purdue game, which they really didn't need all three guys, with Becker, Surratt, and Cooper. So having all three of those guys available would be huge. With Daly especially, it's tough for the defensive line because, I mean, you've already lost Kellen Wyatt, who was really, really good for them in the early part of the season, was one of the stars of that line against Oregon, especially in a high-level game on the road. Wyatt goes down. Stephen Daly, who hadn't even started in the first half of the season, comes in and really fills that role extremely, extremely well. And then now, if he is injured again, like you said, we don't know the extent of the injury. We don't know if he actually is injured. It's kind of seems like he is, but we don't want to speculate, like you said. So, but having both of those guys be either injured or out would be tough, because those guys are two of the best in the business of what they do. And you would just really, really need someone else to step up. Daniel and Duke Way would probably be next up if Daly can't go for whatever reason. But and Duke Way would be obviously helped by the fact that Mikhail Kamara is on the other edge. But that would be a significant loss and something you'd have to scheme around. And obviously we don't want to, like you said, speculate too much going into that game. Other than that, Indiana is pretty healthy. It'll be nice to get Drew Evans another couple of weeks to really heal up as he continues to work his way back. Get that offensive line kind of figured out where they want to go with it, because they were running guys in and out of that offensive line all game against Ohio State. So if you can settle on a five that you like going into the Rose Bowl, that would be a real bonus for this team as well. So having that bye is really, really important. That's why that Big Ten championship for all of the, oh, it doesn't matter, you're gonna get a bye anyway. Well, maybe. But it was nice to win it and remove all doubt. And now you get a chance. You have 3 weeks or more to rest up and figure out what you want to do.
Yeah. And we also still have Notre Dame is still whining, still looking for some cheese for their wine, as Pete Bavakwa has gone on a campaign just railing the ACC about that they have openly campaigned against Notre Dame, which I think that's crap. They openly campaigned for Miami, one of their conference members, which, I'm sorry, did they do something wrong? No, join a conference, Notre Dame. A, B, don't lose to Miami. Notre Dame, B, C, beat somebody. Gee whiz. I don't know what in the world, because other than Notre Dame, it's like the SEC is. But they're like, but we're Notre Dame. But we're Notre Dame. It's like that's what they expect them to just walk in. Their resume is not worthy of being included, in my opinion, of this championship. Now, a great argument regarding Alabama, but you cannot use the conference championship loss in that argument.
I don't know about that. Why can't you use the conference championship loss? They made it.
Because
why can't you use it?
I will tell you.
They got destroyed in that
game. That's how it's been set up.
Every other conference champion has dropped in the rankings. Every other conference championship loser has dropped. Every single one, except for Alabama in the last 5 years.
Every single one. So did Alabama drop at all?
No, they stayed exactly where they were. And if they had dropped...
I have an issue with that. I don't think Alabama deserves to be in there.
No.
My opinion. The reason I said you can't, because they said you're not supposed to get dinged. But
No. They have never said that, and they have dinged teams in the past. Like the SEC has said we shouldn't be dinged for playing in a conference championship. The committee has never said we don't want to ding teams, because they dinged SMU last year and they didn't drop them out of the field, but they dropped them a spot, and that was when they lost by a last second field goal. Right? Like that is my thing. There has been a false dichotomy created here. I think people have not paid particular attention. Miami Notre Dame is not the problem. Miami Notre Dame is not the issue. Miami or Alabama is the issue. Notre Dame is a much, much better football team than Alabama.
And you know how I would counter that? I think Texas A&M is not as good as Alabama.
I don't know about that. Alabama was.
Have you looked at Texas A&M's resume? They have seven SEC conference wins over teams that combined record of 12-44. They had three wins over teams that had two conference wins by a total of 10 points. They didn't. Sure. They've not. Yeah, no. I'm sorry.
But here is the point. Notre Dame deserved to be in this field. Like Notre Dame is one of the five best teams in the country. Notre Dame is a team that had.
Oh, that's crap.
No, they are. They are. They are a team that at the beginning of the season, and like I get it. They lost at the beginning of the season.
Oh, you think Notre Dame is better than Texas Tech?
I think they are in the range of Texas Tech and Oregon. That is about how good Notre Dame. Look at any advanced metric, and I understand the committee doesn't use advanced metrics. I get it, but Notre Dame is up there. Believe me.
Why did we wait this long to get this good discussion going? Damn it, this is a good one.
I know. I cover Notre Dame. This Notre Dame team is better than the team that went to the title game last year. That is why Notre Dame is so bad, because they knew this team could win a national championship. Not that it was going to, but that it had a chance to do so. And you're almost never in the rest of this 12-team or 16-team playoff.
Who did Notre Dame beat that makes them not worthy?
I'm not saying resume. I am saying on the field.
Doesn't it take a resume to get into the college football playoff?
Their resume was just as good as Alabama's. By most metrics, it was just as good as Alabama's. They won 10 games in a row, all by double digits, which no one else did.
Games in a row does not impress me when you're not playing anyone.
Okay, but they played two ranked teams in that span, three teams that are in the top 20 by strength of record, and they beat them all. Okay, and that is my point here, right?
Iowa has four losses and has a better resume than Notre Dame.
Absolutely.
Here's Iowa.
Iowa didn't win any of those games. Iowa lost to USC.
Iowa lost four games to ranked teams by a total of 15 points.
Notre Dame lost two games to ranked teams by a total of 4 points, and they beat USC, who Iowa lost to. What are we talking about here?
Notre Dame is no better than Iowa's.
No, they're not. That's wrong. It's just wrong. That's incorrect. And look, I covered.
Get to a conference.
I watched the games. They were a team that at the beginning of the season had a fatal flaw. They were terrible in pass defense for the first three games of the season. It was awful. They were terrible, and they fixed it. And by the end of the season, they weren't just, okay, we fixed our flaw. They were fantastic at it. And so, yeah, I understand them not getting in. I understand the reasons why it didn't happen. But that is a team that could have made a deep run in the playoff. And Alabama and Oklahoma are not capable of making deep runs in the playoff, and frankly, neither is Ole Miss. That's why Notre Dame is upset. It's because they are better. They are a better football team than teams in the field.
Five teams worthy of winning the national championship this year: the four byes and Texas and Oregon.
Notre Dame is in that category with Texas Tech and Oregon. If you don't want to put them with Georgia and Ohio State and Indiana, fine. But Notre Dame is in that category with Texas and Oregon. And resume and how good you actually are two different things. And I get that. I do. But in terms of how good Notre Dame is on the field, that is a national championship level team. I'm not saying that their resume was the best. I'm not saying that. But if you look at the metrics that tell you how good the team actually is, all of them consider Notre Dame a top five team. Every single one of them. And that's why Notre Dame is mad, because they had a team last year
against the record that they have played.
All of the opponent adjusted metrics. Every single one of them have Notre Dame as a top five team in the country. Every single one.
Because they had a weak schedule.
Opponent adjusted metrics.
That plays nine conference games, not games against cherry-picked teams from that were big in the 30s and the 40s.
Opponent adjusted metrics have Notre Dame as a top five team in the country. There was no one that was going. The Alabama and Oklahoma struggled against bad teams at the end of the season in the SEC. Alabama needed a late touchdown to be a 5-7 Auburn team.
Alabama's not good either.
That's what I'm saying. That's why Notre Dame is bad, because they're a better football team than Alabama.
I don't know that they aren't, but I do know this: they didn't prove that they were, because they didn't put themselves in a position to prove it, because they don't play in a conference that's playing nine conference games like everybody else will be doing.
I mean, they played nine Power Five games. They played nine Power Conference games.
You can say that, but you can pick out the weakest ass Power Five teams that you want. They did not play anybody that was what I would call a truly, truly tough team. Who is the toughest team they played? Miami? They lost. Who's the next toughest team?
I mean,
they're barely better than average, and they lost at home. Then their best win over a barely better than average USC team. That's it. Get into a conference, play nine conference games where you can't pick and choose what you do. And then you can have an argument. But until then, they're going to just take their ball and go home, and they don't get their way.
Here's what I'll say. Their resume is the exact same as Indiana's last year. And I stood on the table and said Indiana should get in, because when you dominate teams that aren't very good, which is exactly what Indiana
deserved to get in last year, but we're not talking about last
year. They did. The difference is the SEC teams this year are 10-2. Whereas last year they were 9-3. If there had been all those SEC teams that went 10-2 last year, IU's probably on the outside looking in, and they're probably mad about it. And they would have deserved to be, because they killed everybody, even though they didn't play anyone who was any good, which is fine. Beating teams by a huge margin, no matter how good they are, is a skill. Indiana was fantastic at it last year, and they deserve to be in the playoff. And Notre Dame was the same way this year. The difference is those SEC teams from last year that were 9-3 that didn't really have a case. This year, a bunch of them were 10-2, and that's just how it goes. But that they had the same resume as Indiana did last year. Everyone, all the Indiana people, including me, stood on the table and said, damn it, this is a really good Indiana team. And Notre Dame had this
They were. And this season has shown that.
But, well, I'm not really. Like, you can't say from one season to the next. But I'd like, if Indiana had gone 6-6 last year, that doesn't mean that they weren't very good last year. But it's one of those things where beating teams by a huge margin is a skill, regardless of how good those teams are. If they are like middle to lower tier power conference teams, beating them by 50 points is a big deal. That means you are good, full stop. And yeah, I understand that the committee uses quality wins and uses the top 25 wins and uses those metrics, and that's why Alabama and Oklahoma
uses, let's be honest, the committee uses whatever they need to use when they want to use at their convenience, because it's
and that's Notre Dame's point, is that
but it's their point when it's not convenient for them, but when it is convenient for them, and it's not just them, it's everybody. If it had been Miami, we'd be having this argument about with Miami. Okay, let's say they had let Notre Dame in and Miami out. What the hell do you think that argument was going to be when Miami?
My point has been all along is that Miami and Notre Dame is a false dichotomy. Miami and Notre Dame both deserve to be in because both of those teams are better than Alabama and Oklahoma by any conceivable metric other than, well, they beat a bunch of SEC teams. Like, that has been my argument for 5 weeks now. And no one has ever been able, like, no Alabama or Oklahoma fan has been able to explain to me, well, we're better because of this. No. The Alabama and Oklahoma are not good football teams compared to Notre Dame and Miami, but the committee set it up to be Notre Dame versus Miami at the end. And that to me was a mistake by the committee from the beginning, and the process was terrible. And so Notre Dame is mad a lot at the process. The process is why Notre Dame is upset. If they had been out on the outside looking in the entire time, they wouldn't be nearly as upset. But the committee told them for weeks, you're in, just keep winning, and then they pulled the rug at the last minute. That's why Notre Dame is so upset.
Man, this was fun. I don't know why we waited 20 minutes to get going. It was a blast. That was a blast. Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. Make sure you're not only giving him a follow, but if you're up in the Fort Wayne area, being a subscriber and keeping up with all the great content that he puts out. And he's a hard-working man, let me tell you. He was down here in Bloomington with us last night and then made the trek, matriculated back to Fort Wayne. Hey, does Fort Wayne have a name? What's for the town? You know,
the Summit City.
Before he matriculated back to the Summit City.
That's right.
Appreciate you, brother.
Absolutely, Jim. Thanks for having me on. As always.
Are you going to Lexington?
That is the plan. Yes, I'm looking forward to it. I've never been to Rupp before, so really, really excited for that.
Appreciate you, brother.
All right, Jim. Have a great day.
We've got lots more coming up. Indiana Sports Beat Radio rolls on after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, coming to you on this Wednesday. We've made it to the halfway point. I hope you're doing well. Jim Coyle with you as always. Joined now by Kyle Nedenrip from the Indy Star, the high school beat writer for the Star. And finally made it through the high school football season. For the most part, some recruiting things still happening. Of course, don't want to jump past, you know, the Big Ten Championship just this past Saturday in Indianapolis, Kyle, with Indiana for the first time in that. An Indiana team for the first time, which was huge for the state. It's huge for the state in football. But I guarantee you, there is a hell of a lot more Indiana high school coaches and players there this time around than normal.
Yeah, and how about my man Dylan Sin just spitting facts in your previous segment?
Whatever.
You got to clip that. And that should be clipped and put everywhere.
Oh, don't worry. What are you, a Notre Dame fan?
No. I do agree. I agree with this premise that Notre Dame is a top. You know, could have made a run. I get your reasoning too as well. But Dylan brought it.
I also have to argue the other side. Somebody's got to be the arguer. Yeah.
I get it, man. I get it. And they, you know, they win one of those two games early. There's no debate. But yeah, I was hoping. I'm, you know, I get so tired of the Paul Feinbaum stuff and the SEC stuff. I'm like, man, I hope our Big Ten teams just smash their way through it.
I hope that the Big Ten puts three out of the four. I hope Oregon gets into that mix. That would just be fantastic to see three out of the four Big Ten teams, because I already think that not only is it very likely that a Big Ten team is going to win the national championship again, it is very possible that it will be a third different Big Ten team. And that could be Indiana or Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it'll be Indiana, to be honest with you, but you know, if it happens to be one of the other two, I mean, you know, the Big Ten has won the last 2 years. So, I mean, I don't know what else, you know, and I do understand the SEC depth. If you look to the bottom of the conference and the, you know, the second half of the conference, or even maybe even the two thirds of the conference after the top teams, the SEC is deeper from that standpoint. But man, I mean, I don't know. There's just so much, you know, Alabama and Oklahoma are not, and I've watched them play. I mean, it's they're not great teams. I mean, and they may go out and you know, they may make a run. I doubt it, but yeah, I was kind of, you know, Notre Dame, I kind of put it in that same category as a Northern team. So I was kind of hoping they'd get in, but yeah, anyway, to your point, yeah, great day for Indiana football, obviously, for, you know, the state of Indiana and college football. And, you know, it's a really cool deal. I mean, Saturday's a day that people will remember, you know, forever, as far as that goes. I mean, to see where this program has come from, and there's another journey to be had here in the next few weeks. But you know, even if, no matter what happens, I mean, that's going to be a special day when you look back at it years from now. So, but yeah, it's really cool. I mean, it only helps, obviously, from a recruiting standpoint, you know, putting Indiana in the same category as Ohio State, you know, when it comes to recruiting. And it's funny because, you know, I talked to Caden Curry last week and his coach Eric Moore, and, you know, he was, you know, he did definitely consider IU, and that was a different IU with Coach Allen was there. And, you know, they had made some strides in that 2020 season, and then he committed after that. And, you know, they had kind of sunk back down the next year, but IU was definitely in the category, you know, and he's out there playing on Saturday for Ohio State. But you know, a lot of IU ties, obviously, with him being from here and, you know, having considered IU at one point. So you do, I was in my mind kind of wondering, I wonder if time was different and, you know, the timelines were different, he could have been playing on the other side of that game on Saturday. That would have helped, you know, IU if that was the case, for sure, because he's a game wrecker now. I mean, but
ask Fernando about that. He's still trying to get his breath back from the first play of the game when he got knocked into next week by Caden Curry. I'm like, whoo, that was a scary moment for Indiana.
Yeah, he said something about it. I forget how he put it, but yeah, he said he's like, he's hit by a Mack truck or something. So that definitely looked like it.
I was so impressed that hit, because there's so much energy packed in to that blow. And it seems like, yeah, he's moving, but it's not like he's got a 40-yard sprint head start, but he's like, he has that kind of burst within 3 or 4 yards to be able to deliver that kind of a blow.
Amazing. Yeah, he's got the quick twitch, you know, athleticism that's really unique for a player his size. And I was lucky enough to see it for years at Center Grove, and how dominant he was. Like, you don't see defensive, a lot of times defensive linemen are more, they're not going to have the biggest stats in the world a lot of times, because they're kind of eating up blockers a lot of times and allowing others to make plays. But Curry was a different, and he had good teammates around him too at that time also, which made it even more, but their defensive line was insanely good. I mean, they were so good, and he was a major reason for that. And he was always making play. I mean, he was always in the backfield. He was always running backs down, running. I mean, he's just a special, special dominant player. But yeah, I was wondering, like, I wonder if things were different, if you know, he would have been on the other side of that. Who knows? I mean, like,
You never know. You may still see him in an Indiana uniform yet. Yeah, Zen Mikowski played for Ohio State, now at Indiana, with the transfer portal guys moving here and about. You just never know how things happen to work out for whatever reason. So, but yeah, it's just going to be incredible. And now even though Fernando Mendoza is not from Indiana, representing an Indiana school and most likely going to win the Heisman Trophy. That is gigantic, bringing the Heisman Trophy back to the state of Indiana. That's a pretty big deal.
Oh, definitely. It's huge. I mean, you're going to put that trophy in your, where everybody can see it when recruits come in, you know, when people come to the stadium. I mean, it's an incredible thing for IU to be able to, promote that. Even to be a finalist is a great thing. I mean, that does wonders for your program also, but for him to win it would, that's something forever. You know, that's something when you go to stadiums, those are things that are on display and people come through and you put a, you know, you put that front and center. I mean, that's and hopefully in IU's case, maybe you put that next to the national championship trophy. So that's probably putting going a little too far yet just now, but that would be something else if you could put those two things together.
Yeah, Indiana is they have the opportunity to make history, and not just program history. I'm talking college football history. If they're able to complete the deal, they've got the Big Ten championship. They have the Big Ten Coach of the Year. They have the Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year, the Quarterback of the Year. If they can now go and win a national championship or get the Heisman Trophy, probably going to have the National Coach of the Year. And if they could add a national championship to that, I don't know that all of that has ever been accomplished by one program in the same season ever in the history of college football.
Yeah, it really reminds me. I was in Missouri when the Rams in 1999 went to the, and I'm comparing NFL to college, which is different, but when they went to the Super Bowl in 99 and Kurt Warner led them to the Super Bowl. This kind of reminds me of that story a little bit when no one expected you to, and people expected IU to be good this year, but just from an overall standpoint of kind of a dream season and a dream scenario. I mean, and they ended up making a movie about the, and I love Kurt Warner, so I was kind of a sucker for that movie anyway, but these are the things you make movies about is I think kind of what I'm getting at, but it's a great story. It's so cool that, a program that hasn't been anything for years and years has been able to rise to this level. And, I tweeted this out Saturday night. I got a text from Connor Christensen when Cignetti was hired. I called Connor because Connor played for him at Elon, and it's like, tell me about this guy, whatever that time.
And who's Connor Christensen?
He played quarterback at Fishers. I covered him in high school. Connor went on to play at Elon. Like I said, he got there. I think he'd been there when Cignetti, I can't remember the timeline exactly, but he played for Cignetti, and he's like, this guy, and he was telling me, this guy's going to win. There's something about him that, and Cignetti actually tweeted that story out, shortly after he got hired. It was in December, I think, of 23. And, and Connor on Saturday night, he texted me the emoji with sunglasses, and I just thought that was funny because, he was right. I mean, he's like, this guy's going to, of course, everyone's skeptical when Cignetti gets there just because, we just didn't know, who thought this would happen. So,
who can ride under the radar for their entire career into their 60s and then go to the depths of hell of college football and in 10 minutes raise it up like Lazarus?
Mm-hmm.
That's not even an Angelo Pizzo movie.
Yeah. I wanted to tell Connor too, like, there's no way you even expected that, but I just kind of, I just said, LOL, thanks for sending this. And it's just funny how right he turned out to be. But yeah, who would have thought? You know, I think we even
everybody thought this after the fact. And I'm not, and I'm not saying I shouldn't. I didn't mean it that way. But why is it all these stories are coming up? But at the time, it was like biggest kept secret in all of football.
Yeah, but I do give Connor credit. I mean, he did say it in the moment. He's like, he's going to win at IU, and has turned out to be way more than we even thought was possible. But yeah, and you watch the games IU plays. This isn't a fluke thing. It isn't a schedule. You know, I think last year people were like, it's a schedule thing. It's this and that. And the at least the skeptics did. You know, this year they are, in my opinion, the best team in college football. They are, you know, top to bottom. Quarterback play, you know, outstanding. You have to have a good quarterback, obviously. But, you know, the line play, the defense, you know, they don't give up anything easy. They're always in the right place. You know, they rise to the occasion when the game's on the line, you know, always. So, I mean, there's really no, you know, there's no deficiencies that really spring to mind with this team. So, you know, as long as you can stay away from injuries and, you know, no one can predict that. But yeah, I mean, they are, you watch them play and they're like, you know, they were right there with Ohio. I mean, Ohio State could have won that game too, but to be right there with Ohio State, you know, that says everything about, you know, where both those programs. I think I would love to see a rematch, to be honest. I think that'd be a great game.
Ooh, easy there, partner, because you might get just that wish with both of these teams in different brackets. Oregon is in the opposite position that they were last year. Last year they were the number one seed, and Ohio State was sitting in the wings with that fifth number five ranking, and that's who they had to play right off the bat. It's going to be the case for Indiana, probably going to more than likely. Well, that's first they get the winner of the Oklahoma Alabama game, and if they were to go on, would probably be Oregon. But the possibility of Kalen DeBoer, the former Indiana OC. Mm-hmm. And going against Indiana, that would be something. And I love Kalen. He's a great dude, great coach. But man, they're not loving him right now down in Tuscaloosa. But they're not going to understand the fact that this ain't that era that Nick Saban was in, where he was one of the few that was paying players at the levels that they were paying them then. Because if people want to act like that they weren't, that's, you can be naive all you wish, but that's the fact, and it's not going to be that way. That's why Vanderbilt is giving these teams all they want in the SEC. So Indiana giving all these teams they want in the Big Ten. It's a different time, man, and fans are so spoiled, and they're just going to have to adjust and understand life has changed.
Yeah, and I agree with you on DeBoer. I think he's a great coach. I think he'll be, you know, if it doesn't work out there at Alabama, I think he'll go somewhere and be really good wherever he's at next. It's just hard. You know, he's in a tough spot, you know, when you're following a legend. And, you know, things can kind of – we know we see it here with IU basketball a lot, how quickly things can go sour in a place where you're just expecting greatness every year. And Alabama's in that position right now. And they're not a – obviously, they're in the playoff. They're not a terrible team by any means. But yeah, it's just hard. I mean, I think the toxicity can get you pretty quickly at a place like that. And I do think he's a – I really like him as a coach. I think he'll – continue to do, you know, if it doesn't work there, he'll go somewhere and be a really good coach somewhere else. And I think a lot of programs would be lucky to have him. But yeah, I don't know. I don't see it this year from them. I think IU is a much better team right now than Alabama is. So, but yeah, I mean, Oklahoma could beat him, and Oklahoma's a challenge as well.
Yeah, and recruiting wise, there weren't any flips that I recall, big time flips here late in the this recruiting cycle, but Indiana had a very good class. They were able to flip some from outside, like a Penn State guy and whatnot. But from within the state, they got the guys that they were expecting to get, a pretty good class, not what they'll probably get as they go forward next year. As you know, when you continue to win like this, players are going to start knocking on your door instead of the opposite. And Indiana's going to start getting more of these Caden type Caden Curry type players before they go to Ohio State, Kyle?
Yeah, we'll see. You know, the 27 class is really good. You know, Monchon Sales from Lawrence North, five-star receiver. You have Mason Oglesby from New Pal, who's a, you know, big-time tight end, you know, a guy you can split out, and he's kind of the, you know, kind of the future type of receiver, you know, who can block and be, you know, be very versatile, hard to cover for linebackers, that type of guy. So I think he would be, and he's visited IU a lot, you know, so there, and you could go down the list. There's a lot of 27 guys that will be on IU's radar going forward. Yeah, the 26 class, you know, they got everybody locked up. There was no major changes as far as in-state guys go there. So they did their – and Purdue got a good one too, Jet Goldsberry from
how the hell did that happen?
Well, he part of it's the Lane Kiffin situation, and I did talk to Jet about that, and he said there's some other factors also, I think, too, that came into play. He did like the had a connection with the coach they hired there at Ole Miss. You know, so I think there was, but his dad went to Purdue, you know, there's a connection there. Purdue continued to, you know, they continued to recruit him, even through the, you know, that's how football is. I mean, you just kind of keep contacts with players, and Purdue stayed in the mix. And, you know, once the coaching change happened, they were there to, you know, to get him. So that's a great, you know, that's a really good last minute, pickup for Purdue. You know, and he's coming off an injury, but he's got plenty of time. I mean, it's December, so he's got a full year to, or not a full year, but he's got several months to get, you know, rehabbed and everything. So, you know, that's a really good get. He's a super athletic kid. He'll be a defensive player, most likely, I would think, for Purdue. You know, it always helps when you get in-state guys. And I was, you know, I think that's going to be a guy that can help get other players there. That's kind of what you need sometimes, kind of a Pied Piper effect. And, you know, I think Purdue is definitely, you know, IU's obviously doing what they're doing, and everybody loves them for good reason. But Purdue's staff has done a good job making ties in the state. Every coach I talk to about them is very positive. That's not always the case with Purdue, so I think that's good. You know, it's a good relationship building thing that they've done there, which needs to be the case. They're going to be a developmental program that, you know, you're kind of starting over in some ways. And you know, so I think there's some good vibes going there from an in-state standpoint.
I'm looking forward to it, man. What's up next for you? I know you've got the high school basketball season going on.
Yeah, I saw a lot of basketball Saturday at Brownsburg. They had the Sneakers for Santa event. You know, got a chance to see Jason Gardner play, and Pike's really good. That's a fun team to watch. You know, there's another one Saturday at Southport, so I'll be over there for the tip-off classic. But yeah, I got, you know, Mr. Football finalists are out. That'll be decided here probably in the next week. As far as the vote is out now, so we don't know, you know, who the winner will be yet, but that'll be coming at some point in the next week. And then a lot of other football postseason stuff and covering some basketball as well. So still a little bit in the crossover, but about to put a bow on football here shortly.
Munson Sales, Lodge North five-star wide receiver, could become Indiana's first five-star prospect ever. Is there a leader? Is there top schools, two, three?
I would say, you know, he went to Miami during the season, and really I talked to him about that visit. He really liked it. You know,
kind of hard not to.
So, you know, he's been to Ohio State, you know, and he has offers from all these places. So it's not like, he's right. Just, you know, it's not a hey, you know, this is just a visit type thing. So he, you know, he's offers, you know, Alabama. I know they're strong in the mix. I know Ohio State and Michigan. Michigan definitely is a factor. You know, he's been up there a few times, and, you know, there's a connection there with McCulley from his high school, but also a connection with IU and their LN ties with Omar Cooper and Davion Chandler, of course, there too. And Davion was at one of the games I was at. Davion had a bye week for IU, and he was there on the sideline, and, you know, he's a great kid. I enjoyed catching up with him. And, you know, he's in sales here about IU for sure. You know, so we'll see. I mean, I think ultimately he's going to decide. It's not going to be necessarily, come down to what people are telling you to do. He's going to have so much NIL to parse out and go through as well. So it'll be interesting. I mean, we don't get that many 5-stars, honestly. We get a ton of 4-stars. You know, the top guys are normally 4-stars, but 5-stars is like a different stratosphere. So it'll be interesting to see what he ends up doing.
Well, and a recruiting win there would also be huge for Indiana, because it would do a couple of things. It would be the biggest recruiting win in program history when you throw in Miami, Ohio State, Alabama, Michigan, and I'm sure a host of others. The fact Indiana has never nailed a 5-star prospect on top of that, and it would just add to what they're doing and add to the momentum. But this is one of those recruiting battles that they need to win to break through that ice.
Yeah, I think so. It'd be huge. And if you haven't seen him play, he's like a 6'4", 6'5", receiver who is fast. He runs track. He is legit. Very, very good player. So he's a guy who could come in and help you right away, even at the highest level. And that's why he's a 5-star. That's not breaking news, but he would be a huge, it'd be kind of like, I don't know how to compare it exactly, but it's not basketball. So, it's different. But, I remember when Cody Zeller committed to IU and how big a deal that was. And it was kind of, signaled something. It seemed bigger than basketball even at that time. But I don't know if this is this may be a totally different situation, but it does feel a little different when you're a 5-star and you have Ohio State and Michigan. Normally when Ohio State and Michigan are knocking at the door, it's kind of a done deal, but I don't know if that's the case in his situation.
Cignetti said it. Indiana's the newest rising superpower in college football. Kyle Nedenrip from the Indy Star. Make sure you're giving him a follow, keeping up with all of his great coverage on Indiana high school sports. Appreciate you, my friend.
You bet. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, sir. There he is. We've got more coming up. Zach Browning's going to join us next. Plenty more to get to. We've got to hear from Darren DeVries later, Lamar Wilkerson after his record-setting night at Simon Scott Assembly Hall last night as well. We're back with plenty more right after these messages.
I mean, how freeing is that to watch, and just what do you think kind of drove that?
Yeah, like you said a few times, he's had a couple nights where he struggled. Like, I was never worried about that. He's that level of a shooter. Now he's not going to do 44 every night, but he has that confidence. He puts in the work, every day. And it was fun to see him kind of get loose and kind of showcase, all that work he puts in.
The connectivity tonight with the offense, just pleased with kind of the improvements you made over the last two games. And, when you – is it get back to basics in practice, or what do you kind of do to kind of refocus them?
Yeah, we had gone back here, after the Minnesota game and looked at some of the offense and like what caused it, because it was, there wasn't a lot of movement and things. So as we went backwards, looking at some games early in the season, comparing it to now, it stood out pretty good. So we put a ton of time here this last week on just getting more actions, more movement. And sometimes you can't always do that. People deny you can't just throw the ball from side to side. So at some point you still have to be able to make a play. But I thought the guys did a really good job tonight keeping the ball, as we like to say, hot. Keep it hot and keep it moving. And player and ball movement I thought was really good tonight.
Keep it hot. Keep it hot. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, here on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along, Jim Coyle. Joined now by Zach Browning. That was Coach Darren DeVries, the Indiana men's basketball coach, after the Hoosiers just throttle Penn State last night, blitzing them, putting up 113 points. And that was behind 44 points from Lamar Wilkerson, a Simon Scott Assembly Hall record, scoring record on an Indiana team program record, 10 made three-pointers. And, Zach, I don't know that record lasts this season.
Yeah, I mean, if Lamar Wilkerson's doing that on a random Tuesday in December, you know, if he catches fire, or even Tucker DeVries, that's the thing about this team, Jim, is that Lamar Wilkerson broke the record on Tuesday, the 10 made three-pointers, but there's two or three guys on this team that you could probably point to and say, hey, they all could break this record, whether it's Lamar, whether it's Tucker DeVries, Nick Dorn with the way he shot it over the last couple of games.
Nick Dorn is one of those sneaky guys that's going to have a night or two that is going to be well above average, I think.
You're exactly right. And that's, I think, where the scary part of this team starts to come in. I mean, there's just simply no team in the country, well, few teams in the country, I should say, that can stop any team, let alone Indiana, when they're going to shoot better than 50% from three-point range. It's just about being more consistent with that three-point shooting. You know, you can't go from shooting 50% against Marquette and shooting 40% from three against Kansas State and then having the light night last night that Indiana did against Penn State, but then also mixing in that bad loss against Louisville or that bad loss against Minnesota and then the trough first 5 minutes against Louisville. It's just finding a way to be more consistent and not having these ebbs and flows and peaks and valleys. But last night was special, certainly a good way to get Indiana fans' minds off of the two-game skid.
Absolutely. And not only that, you're coming off of a kind of a rival game with Louisville, but although it didn't, that feeling wasn't there that day, mainly because the Big Ten Championship, I think, which is where the focus was. But you've got a big game coming up Saturday with Kentucky. And, boy, it's probably – this could not be any more well-timed for Indiana to get into this shooting rhythm right now, because you're going to need a performance – not necessarily like that, because those are very random, but – they're going to need to do more than the normal on the road in Rupp Arena on Saturday.
And it's an important game for both sides, which kind of adds to the moment and adds to the magnitude of the game. Because you look at prior to Monday, both teams were in the AP Top 25. Obviously, Indiana had lost to straight Kentucky, dealing with their own struggles. Both teams dropped out of the AP Top 25 this week. So this is a big opportunity for a win that would add to the resume of these two teams that they don't really have many resume wins. If you look at Indiana, Marquette doesn't look like it's that great of a win. Kansas State doesn't look like it's that great of a win. Sure, beating them the way that you did, beating Penn State the way that you did, that certainly helps with the advanced metrics. But if you look at Indiana's top opponents in the non-conference schedule, those two big-time games, those two marquee games are Louisville and they're Kentucky. So if you can grab a – now Kentucky's not the top 10, top 15 team they were that people were expecting them to be coming into the season. They're dealing with some injuries. They're dealing with some issues that arise when you build an entirely new roster via the transfer portal, just like Indiana is with the inconsistency and whatnot. But this is a big game for both teams because both teams don't really have a big win yet so far this season. Both teams don't really have a win that says, oh, look, we're on the border of that NCAA tournament come March. This win shows that we should get in and something like that. So I think this is a big opportunity, not just because it's Indiana, Kentucky, but there are stakes beyond just the fact that it's IU versus UK for the first time in over a decade. I think that really adds to the magnitude of this game.
Oh, boy, does it ever. And the fact that things are not exactly going swimmingly right now down in Lexington for Mark Pope. The natives are a little restless. A loss period at home to Indiana, would exacerbate the situation. But if that were to be Indiana in the first game of the series being resumed in over a decade, oh my, the ceiling might crack at Rupp Arena.
Yeah, that's the thing. These two teams, they haven't played in a while, Jim, but you still know the dislike is there. I mean, if you talk to – there's a good, solid section of the Indiana fan base that probably hates Kentucky more than they hate Purdue, and for good reason. So
I am going to tell you, grew up I leave my – you know, a long time ago, I said, all right, you gotta take your fandom and check your fandom at the door, and that's not an issue. It's hard for Kentucky. I grew up disliking Kentucky. It was just innate. You didn't have to even teach me. I had to learn to dislike Purdue as when I was a student or younger. I had to learn to dislike them. I didn't care.
there was no learning for that. And but that's great, because that's what a great rivalry should be like. And it should have never ended, especially between, you know, two schools, what they have done best up until now, basketball. It just should have kept continuing. It's Mitch Barnhart's fault for allowing the ego of John Calipari to stand, to be bigger than what this series is, than these two behemoths. And I think that was a huge shame, although I'll be honest with you, very fortuitous for Indiana, because they probably would have lost about 8 out of every 10 games they had played between those two this time.
That's the thing, and it goes back to your point. You know, depending on when you grew up, depending on where you grew up, Kentucky was always good during those times. Purdue wasn't, so naturally the biggest kind of quote-unquote rival for Indiana during a lot of people's childhoods was Kentucky, because Purdue was simply a non-factor. They weren't what they are today. And the other factor is these two teams aren't, you know, Kentucky's not a bottom five team in the SEC right now. Indiana's not a bottom five team in the Big Ten right now. These are two teams that are competing for the NCAA tournament. These are two teams that come March believe, A, they will be in the tournament, and B, can potentially be a single-digit seed in the NCAA tournament. So I think that also adds the intrigue. This isn't, you know, oh, two old rivals, two old schools that were once blue bloods, maybe Indiana, not so much that anymore. These are two schools that have their glory days are much, much, much further in the past. No, these are two schools with new regimes that still want to kind of keep that old tradition and at least honor that old tradition and Mark Pope and Darren DeVries. And these are two schools that have long been rivals. They've long disliked each other. And now on the other side of a long break, on the other side of a long hiatus, it's kind of a new era for both of these two teams. And it almost feels like it's a new era of the rivalry, just because of the fact that there's two new head coaches. There's a lot of newness around these two programs. Obviously, there's not much that was similar the last time these two teams met other than the names on the jerseys. So I think it's the kind of newness of this specific game, you know, the fact that it's rolling in a new set of games between Rupp, between Gainbridge, between Bloomington and Assembly Hall over the next couple of years. So I think the fact that it almost feels like a new era, and when we look back on this in 30 years, you know, you'll have the pre-2015 Indiana versus Kentucky battles, you know, the watch shot included in there, and then you have the post-2020 Kentucky-Indiana battles, and I think this really does feel like the beginning and the kickstart of a new era of this rivalry.
Absolutely. And looking forward to just seeing it happen. And that it comes together fruition on Saturday. So we'll see how that transforms. While that's going on, it could be an unbelievably gigantic day for Indiana athletics for the second week in a row, as Fernando Mendoza will be in New York City at the Heisman Trophy presentation as the betting favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. I can't see him not winning it, Zach, for two reasons. Number one, because he's probably, you know, he's the odds-on favorite. But number two, who else does the world want to see get up there and give this speech that is going to be a combination of a little humor, because he's going to be funny because of how I wonder if he'll be able to maintain his composure, or if he's going to be like he was after the Big Ten championship, or his emotions were coming out. Either way, whatever he says is going to be spectacular, because he's always a cannot miss listen.
Yeah, if his Heisman speech is 1/4 of what his press conference last night was, I think everybody around the country will be entertained. And I know that if you're on the outside of this kind of Indiana bubble, if you don't watch Indiana much, if you don't look at Indiana's media availabilities or post-game stuff that much, you probably don't necessarily see Fernando Mendoza talk that much. And when you do, it's these short little snippets on Twitter. And I know there's a lot of people that don't think it's genuine and don't think it's truly him, but it is. And I think that's the best part, is that when Fernando Mendoza was speaking last night with us. That was the genuine hit. That was the genuine Fernando Mendoza. When Fernando Mendoza, if he were to win the Heisman, that would be the genuine Fernando Mendoza. It's going to be quirky. He might get emotional. It's going to be weird. It's going to be all of those things. All of those adjectives are probably accurate to describe Fernando Mendoza when he's talking, but that's who he is. He's a quirky guy. He's a nerdy guy. He has LinkedIn and YouTube on his phone, and that's about it. He's not your stereotypical high school jock quarterback that's come in and been always the top player at his position. That's just not who Fernando Mendoza is. He's a business guy that happens to be able to throw a football really well and perhaps win the most prestigious individual award in all of college football.
Which in I think all is sports.
Which is perhaps the most intriguing and awesome part about this story as a, in general. But if you look at the case for each, you just, again, as you said, it's hard to see somebody else winning it, in my opinion. You know, Fernando Mendoza just beat Julian Zane in the Big Ten Championship, so you have to throw Julian Zane out of the running, in my opinion. Jeremiah Love ended his season with playing a quarter against Stanford because he got hurt and then didn't have a conference championship because it's Notre Dame and they're not in a conference. Vanderbilt was like the fourth or fifth best team in the SEC this season and didn't make the conference championship. And
Who do you have second?
Probably Pavia, just because of what I outlined. But
yeah, I think that if you put Diego Pavia on Ohio State, he's Ohio State's going to be good, just like they are right now. Maybe better than they are right now, to be honest with you. If you put Julian Sand on Vanderbilt right now, they're not going to be as good as they are right now, in my opinion. Sand is not quite there just yet. He would not have those two bookend first-round NFL draft pick wide receivers to throw to. So I that's my reasoning for Pavia being in the second spot. Jeremiah Love, you know, I don't even consider. Didn't play in a – I think he plays for – who's that, Notre Dame? Oh, yeah, they're not in a conference. Didn't play in a conference championship. He didn't hardly play in the last game. So not going to happen. But to me, there's no way – I think Fernando wins this pretty easily. I think he sealed it with Heisman moments. That the Heisman moment against Iowa, I mean, first of all, the win. He started it with the win at Oregon. That opened everybody's eyes about him, about Indiana, about being taken seriously. The Iowa win where, you know, the pressure is on, got that accomplished. Penn State does the unthinkable, and it's just a magical, magical moment. And then, of course, the 33-yard cat throw and catch to Charlie Becker, which just sealed the Big Ten championship, 13-0. Indiana beats the team that most people thought wasn't going to get beaten this season. So I don't see how he doesn't win it.
That's the thing. And you look at, if we're going to compare and just throw the other two out of the window, if we just compare Pavia and Mendoza, it's the Heisman moments. The stats are relatively the same. They're similar. You know, Pavia's got a lot of those rushing yards, but the stats are pretty similar all told. But if you look at the Heisman moments, if you look at Pavia's case, there's one you can point to. He had a game-winning drive, a game-winning touchdown pass in overtime against Auburn back early in November. But that Auburn team wasn't very good. And I guess you could maybe say the same about Penn State, but I think Penn State probably better than Auburn was this year, especially considering that one was on the road, last second drive. It wasn't overtime where you start at the 2-yard line. So I think Fernando Mendoza's Heisman moments, whether it's Oregon, whether it's Iowa, whether it's winning the Big Ten championship, I think those Heisman moments kind of surmount the one that Pavia has. The one Heisman moment that Pavia can really point to is that overtime win against Auburn. He just doesn't have the quality of Heisman moments. He doesn't have the quantity of Heisman moments. And I think that is really going to be the biggest difference on Saturday when it comes to the voting and when it comes to, in my opinion, I think Fernando Mendoza eventually ends up winning the Heisman.
Absolutely, as do I, and I think Diego Pavia will run second, deservingly so, and I'll let you know how I voted when the votes come out. We're not supposed to talk about it ahead of time. So appreciate you, brother. And are you going to Lexington?
Yes, I will be. It'll be a fun one for sure.
Absolutely. Enjoy it. Zach Browning from thehoosier.com. Make sure you go to thehoosier.com and get subscribed now to keep up with all things Indiana and get a free subscription to The Athletic and get entered in the great grand prize giveaway worth over $400. What are you guys? You crazy? What are you waiting on? Appreciate you, Zach.
Thanks, Jim, as always.
You bet. More coming up. Got to take a quick break. We're back with all of that and more right after these messages.
Andy Moore. Let's through sort of what happens when you're shooting that well and set records like this.
You know, all credit to my team and the coaches. Coach told me that today was going to be the day that I got hot, you know, because I've been having a rough couple of games. So he fed me the ball, and then I seen one, two, three go in. And then after that, you know, they just, like, find a hot hand. So they kept feeding me, and then shots kept going in.
I guess, is there a moment in a game like this, and I think this is a career high for you, but I'm sure you've had nights similar to this before. Is there a moment in a game like this where you feel like even more than normal, just a certain confidence, a certain flow, a certain rhythm when you're catching the ball when it's going up?
Oh, for sure. Hoop looked big as the ocean today, man. So I was just throwing it up there, and it just happened to go in. All glory to God, man.
Were you just shooting for 10 at the end to get to a nice round number? Do you know that was going to be the? Do you know that was the record? You know, you'd get the record there with 10 made threes.
Not at all. I was just shooting, man.
There was Lamar Wilkerson after last night's 44 point performance at the Simon Scott Assembly Hall, a arena record. It surprised me. I'd forgotten. I kind of remember a few years ago being surprised when Trace Jackson Davis got the record that it was that low. I'm like, damn. But yeah, big night. 10 made 3-point shots, an Indiana program record for Lamar Wilkerson. I don't know that that record lasts the season. I'm serious. I could see Tucker DeVries just going off. But man, oh man, you could tell that Lamar was feeling it because. If it was going to touch his hands, it was going to be gone. He went off Steph Curry last night. Hey, the transfer portal, going to be happening, going to be going on here soon. January 2nd, it opens up for everybody. But the NCAA issues a waiver for designated student athletes to enter the transfer portal. The NCAA Committee on Legislative Relief announced it will issue a one-time waiver to allow Division I athletes that programs placed on the Designated Student Athlete, DSA, list to enter the transfer portal between July 7 through August 5th. The deadline for FBS programs to assign DSAs is Sunday, July 6. Players placed on this list are grandfathered in that are exempt from new roster limits implemented as part of the House settlement that was approved last month. We'll talk. That's all stuff that we'll talk about later. Clerical stuff is what I'm looking for. Yeah. Defendant attorneys include grandfathering provisions for roster limits. As part of the settlement, FBS athletic programs are held to strict roster limits. Football, 105. Men's basketball, 15 now total. That includes, you know, walk-ons, whatever. That's it. Baseball, 34. Men's and women's soccer, 28. Softball, 25. Volleyball, 18. How about the volleyball program? Congratulations, Steve Aird, as they continue to roll on this season. And fun day, as always. Transfer portal, baby. It's going to be happening, you know, soon. But while it won't officially open until January 2nd, we're hearing who's going in and people are making announcements. Kenny Minchie, quarterback, Notre Dame. All right, here's the perfect. One of the more talented quarterbacks in this transfer portal cycle will be former Notre Dame signal caller Kenny Minchie, holding 3 years of eligibility moving forward. Very attractive with 3 years. Minchie battled C.J. Carr through fall camp for the QB1 position in South Bend and leaves the Irish program in good standing, having developed
from the experience and ready to land at a place that allows him to take the reins and compete at the highest level. Rivals is hearing several schools to watch for, Wisconsin, Cincinnati, Texas Tech, Florida, North Texas. If I'm a team, I mean, the 3 years of eligibility is very attractive, but why are you leaving? Well, you lost the battle to C.J. Carr. C.J. Carr's young. That's right. I forgot. So he's not going to win that battle. He's going to go find him another battle he can go win. But names, start keeping eyes on names. Indiana will bring a quarterback in from the transfer portal. One that I don't want to say kept my eye on, but I've noticed for the last month because I've known he's going to go into the portal. Arizona State, Sam Levitt. He informed ASU coach Kenny Dillingham that he will be entering the portal. Levitt was the Sun Devil starter the past two seasons after transferring from Michigan State. Good windup back there. He led Arizona State to a Big Ten title and a CFP berth last season. Threw for nearly 2,900 yards, 24 touchdowns. He entered this Big 12 season as the Offensive Player of the Year. He was sidelined by a foot injury that required surgery. He only played in seven games before being ruled out for the year and finished with just over 1,600 yards and 10 TDs. Multiple local reports earlier this week indicated Levitt did not attend the team's end-of-season banquet amid rumors about his future. Now, see, I think that's stupid. It's the end-of-season banquet for the past season. That's a team you were a part of. Your brothers, your teammates. Why are you not going to that? Who cares where you're going to be next year? Why? I don't get that. I don't like that, but it is what it is. Hey, we'll see. Can I thank each and every one of you enough? Appreciate you. Dylan Sin, Kyle Nederip, Zach Browning. We're back tomorrow to do it all again. Alberto's not next up just yet, I don't think. But we can have that discussion tomorrow as well. Appreciate you, peeps. Go out and make it a great one. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.